Well, this is not a boat accident. It wasn't any propeller. It wasn't any coral reef. And it wasn't Jack the Ripper.
It was a shark.
Just when you thought it was safe to open your podcast app.
This shark, swallow you whole.
It's time for the 3 Men in a Retrospective's look at all 4 films contained in the Jaws franchise.
Oh, boys! I think he's come back for his noon feeding.
To help celebrate the original film's 50th anniversary, Garrett.
Maybe he's not in the dungeon, he's already eaten my plate!
Matt.
Polly sent me to find you to tell you that there's a bunch of Boy Scouts out in April Bay doing their mile swim for their merit badges.
And Adam.
Y'all know me. Know how I earn a living.
Have dared to swim the waters started by director Steven Spielberg way back in 1975.
Jesus H. Christ.
From the blockbuster original.
I got the creme de la creme.
All the way to the 1987 final film, Jaws the Revenge.
What are you, some kind of half-ass astronaut?
The guys will look at each film and determine if Jaws is indeed a one-movie franchise.
I want to be sure. You want to be sure. We all want to be sure, okay?
Smile, percolated media listeners.
Mr. Mayor, Chief, ladies and gentlemen.
The 3 Men in a Retrospective's look at Jaws begins now.
Hang on to your socks, lads.
Jaws 3D, or 3 as it's known now, released July 22nd, 1983. Budget was $18 million. Where was all of it spent? Box office, $88 million, so it made a profit. And this is directed for the one and only time by Joe Al. All right, boys, we have reached the movie that I was in love with as a kid. This was the first one I watched when I was a kid. I watched it on repeat. This was my jam. I was told about the first one, and I was like, you know what? I don't need to see that. I got this one. A lot of people would say this is when the series hit skids. Came out in the midst of the 3D craze in the 80s. They had a huge surge in 3D movies. Matt, you and I years ago talked about Friday the 13th Part 3. We had Amityville 3D, and we have this. Adam Bunch, how the hell did you avoid seeing this, sir?
It's amazing, because this was the year that I started going to theaters even. I remember this was Dad taking my brother and I to go see Return of the Jedi. So somehow this movie escaped us, but I know its infamy. I've seen little scenes. I know of its reputation, and I know of Lou Gossett Jr. trying to do some type of weird ass accent throughout this thing. But yeah, I have avoided it until this moment. And am I glad that I avoided it, or do I resent that I missed it out for 40 years? We'll see.
I cannot wait. But until we get to the actual movie itself, let's get to its making. Because, surprise, surprise, this is not the way this movie was originally conceived. As originally conceived, producers David Brown and Richard Zanuck, they were still on board when this was being done. Somehow, some way, they came up with the, not them, but National Lampoon came up with the idea of doing a movie called Jaws 3 People Zero. And John Hughes had a hand in this script. And apparently, I've only read the first few pages, but I remember it starts off with Peter Benchley going for a swim in his backyard pool and getting devoured by an 8-foot shark in his pool. It would have been 90 minutes of that. Matt, I mean, have you read any of that script? And you've actually heard of that famous story, correct?
I know of the story. I've never actually read the script, but the fact that now I know it's out there, I might go and check it out. But it also goes to show that by this point, they sort of, the bloom is off the rose about this franchise being high art. It's amazing how quickly that fell after only 2 movies. And we talk about the cyclical nature. It's just so funny that they asked Joe Dante to possibly direct it after he made Piranha, which is one of the most notorious Jaws spinoffs. The reason why it was shut down, though, at that time, I mean, we'll talk about it momentarily, but I can understand this particular person's rationale, but at the same time, it's kind of hypocritical. For the apparently Spielberg threatened to never work with Universal again if they pursued this movie. And I find that odd because he was also one of the people who stood up for Piranha. Like, he's already put his nose out there to support, if not a parody, at least a send-up of Jaws. But the moment they make an official parody with the Jaws name, that's when that's apparently sacred ground to him.
Well, you got to look at it like this. The guy put his heart and soul into that first film, and he's seeing it go down in flames because this is how the producers see it going. And I'm not going to call it hypocritical because he's done bits in 1941 that sended this up. But I just find it odd that he would put it out there that, you know what, you do this and I will never work for you again. Adam, I'm sure you got your knives out. You're ready to butcher. So go ahead.
Of which part? Spielberg?
Yeah.
Or...
yeah.
I mean, the dude was a director for hire on that first one, let's not forget. And then he, Close Encounters, made a fuck ton of money, as well as the first Jaws. But let's not forget 1942. I mean, I'm glad he was precious about it, but, I mean, that just shows... I don't want to say he hadn't earned the right, but I don't think a lot of other directors would have been afforded that same mentality. But it's obviously worked out. You know, he's had that relationship with Universal forever, so good for him. He still makes a shitload of money every year from Universal, so good for him. But I do think he has ownership of Jaws more than almost anybody, which is crazy when you realize that he didn't create the story. So good for him. I can appreciate it and respect it as much as I don't think any other director, especially at that age, would have been afforded that arrogance.
My feeling on this is, you know, a 90-second bit on SNL or in a movie, I think is funny. I don't know if I could handle 90 minutes of something that I worked my ass off to put on screen just getting sent up. You know what I'm saying? So I know what he's thinking as a late 20s, early 30s director at that time. But after that, Zanuck and Brown were like, okay, well, we thought this was a good idea, but since you guys aren't going to do it, we're just going to get rid of this property, which they did. And they sold it off to Alan Landsberg. Now, Alan Landsberg is a guy who, he worked on a lot of documentaries way back when, worked on some TV. He comes on board, and you know what? He does something I would have probably done too. He hired somebody who is attached to Steven Spielberg in a way where he wrote Spielberg's big movie Duel, which got him Jaws. A guy by the name of Richard Matheson, who has also created I Am Legend and many great Twilight Zone episodes. He's brought on board. He puts a script together that he's really proud of. But in his words, he didn't see most of it in the final product. And he also said that if they had someone who could direct, then maybe he would be proud of having his name attached to this film. But not much, if any, of what he's done is on screen. I guess he had an idea where a shark is swimming in the river, gets thrown into a lake, and starts terrorizing people on that lake. Matt, you remember about Richard Matheson, right?
I do. I mean, I Am Legend. He a lot of short stories like What Dreams May Come, Shrinking Man, Hell House. So a lot of his stuff has been adapted. I would have loved to have seen him do that, because a lot of his stuff, in fact, almost everything I just mentioned, has a fantastical element to it. So I would have liked to have seen what would he have done with something in Jaws that is considerably more grounded than a guy, the last man on Earth, fighting vampires or vampire-like creatures.
Just incredible that this is quite a hire, and this is what they ended up coming up with. But I think it was Landsberg or somebody at the studio who was like, you know what? Matheson's script didn't have an attachment to the previous two films. It did not have the Brodies in it. So they were like, just put the Brodies in this, please. Like, we need them here. We need to follow their trajectory. So Matheson is like, okay, well, fuck that. I mean, I've given you what I've given you. And if you're not going to make it, then fuck off. So once again, they call Carl Gottlieb. He's brought in yet again to do touch-ups on the script. He's the one who puts the Brodies in. And this is our film, guys. All right, let's talk about the director. Now, Matt, as you mentioned, Joe Dante was attached for a while to Jaws 3 People Zero. But once it became known that they were going to try to do Straight-Laced again with a new company, it was Verna Fields, Oscar-winning editor of the first Jaws film and somebody we all praised the work she did on that movie. She recommended Joe Alves because Joe Alves had worked on both previous films. He did a lot of the shark scenes in last week's film, and she thought that he deserved this gig. It should be said, this is his one and only directing credit. But it was his idea. Because of the 3D craze at the time, he goes, I got it. Jaws 3D. And that is why we have a 3D film. And boys, I gotta say, you know, Adam, I had to bite my tongue last week because you're going on and on about, man, this film looks bad. It looks bad. This 3D that they do on this movie, I did not see this in theaters. I was 5 years old when this thing came out. I watched it on cable with friends, and like I said, I fell in love with it as a kid. But the transfer from 3D to a TV screen, to a video screen, is insanely bad. And the reason for that is they hired these guys to do this 3D. And after the movie was out in theaters, they didn't have any way of converting it. So what they ended up doing was you have to do both the left and right eye, right? You have to do lenses for the left eye and lenses for the right eye. They got rid of the right eye part. All you're seeing is the left eye image that's projected on screen, which is why it's so damn grainy. Adam, my God, the look of this, were you aching for last week's film?
No, I was. What I was aching for is for Gypsy and Tom Servo to sit down next to me and rip this thing like an MST3K marathon, because that's how this looks. And parts of it look normal, parts of it look bad, parts of it look abysmally offensive, and parts of it are completely out of focus, fuzzy, and I'm watching it currently on Netflix. You know, that's how I did it. I don't know if there's a way that they can re-release this with a cleaned up version or if they would even bother to, but this is one of the worst looking professional, and I'm using that in quotes, done movies that I've ever seen. And you had 3D movies at the time that have been converted or put out in 2D that don't look this bad, but this is, especially some of the special effects that they put into it, are some of the worst looking that I have ever seen. Not just for a movie of this magnitude, but ever.
Wow, even General of the Corn, huh? That's crazy.
Yeah, I some of these do look like when we finally got the reveal. It's some of those middling movies. They really do.
Yeah, well, and like I said, the guys they hired to do this 3D were so narrow-minded that they thought about, okay, we got to get this image on the screen, not realizing that home video was going to come up on their ass, and they had to convert it for home video, and that's why we get what we get. You know, Alves didn't have a bad cinematographer. He had the guy who would go on to work on X-Files. He'd work on Buffy. He'd do some good cinematography in his future, and I think he's doing okay here. I just don't think that they were given the right advice by the right people in how to do this 3D.
And I do think getting Alves is the right choice. You know, when you're going to continue it on, when you look at who to bring over, I think deciding to hire Alves to shoot this film on paper, and even at the end of the day, is the right decision to make. So I don't fault them for that at all.
Well, we'll talk about it. I'm not sure about that.
The movie speaks for itself. like when you watch this finally, and it's also gotten worse by the fact that you're already taking something with the 3D technology that was strictly a gimmick. I mean, Friday the 13th Part 3 is one of the most blatant examples where all the 3D in that is the cliche, like, stuff shooting at you.
Oh, we get a lot of that here.
You do, but it's done 10 times worse.
Yeah.
So you're already taking something that's gimmicky and you can't even do it. You can't even execute it. Not even well. I will say competently. This thing is such a technological clusterfuck that it might as well be the Jaws ride at Universal when they first started building it. And the most shocking thing about this production and this movie is this is not a National Lampoon's Vacation situation where they create their own theme park and call it Wally World, although it's based on, like, you know, it's supposed to be Disney. This one, it is literally SeaWorld.
Oh, yeah.
It is not a knockoff. It is not a stand-in. This is SeaWorld themselves. I mean, look, this is the second worst example of bad press they would get in the movies. So I guess it's a step up there. But that's also surprising that it's literally SeaWorld.
Insane that they had somebody read this script and say, yeah, you're good. Go ahead and go out there. Apparently, I did some research on that, and apparently what they said, because I watched a documentary that I watched a lot as a kid that Louis Gossett Jr. actually narrates. What they said was they like being involved in this because it does take an educational approach to how the wildlife works, how the marine life works, and how they live, and their general origins. So they like the educational aspect of this movie, but when I think of Jaws 3, I don't think of education.
Well, the lesson is how not to make a movie.
Yeah. We start off underwater, and if we thought last week's score was bad, boys, holy shit. They keep the John Williams shark theme, and that's what they call it. It's the John Williams shark theme. But these horns and harps and new themes just do nothing for me. Adam, come on, the music here sucks, right?
That's a joke. Like, it starts out, and I feel like I'm watching something direct-to-video which barely existed in the 80s. This is it. You know, 5 seconds in, I'm thinking of a 3D movie from the previous year, which is Friday the 13th 3D. This is a weird way to start with music that is iconic, and you're just going to throw that out the window. If you have one thing to hang your hat on, use that, and maybe it's a money thing, but oof.
I think they use
bad choices.
I think they use it twice here. That's how many times.
And I did laugh that they literally give it its own credit as a shark theme for John Williams.
Yeah, and this guy, Alan Parker, he did a lot of TV themes then too, and they definitely cheapened out here. Matt, the music here sucks, right?
The music is one thing. It makes it sound like they had to change things in the way that unofficial movies had to change enough to avoid being sued.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it feel tremendously tacky, as does the giant eyesore that are the credits themselves.
Yeah.
which are magnified by the fact that it's not 3D. So you're already taking something that's very ugly and in some respects painful to look at, and it looks even more of a giant eyesore.
We see a catfish get bitten in half and look at us for a bit. They just keep on this fish as it's trolling around. I remember my dad. This actually scared me as a kid. Believe it or not, this fish turning around and looking like this really freaked me out. My dad would play it up, man. He's like, look at the way it's looking at you. I'm like, oh my God. But man,
that's not a catfish.
What is it?
I'm pretty sure that's a grouper.
Is that a grouper?
Yeah.
We then get the credits. Jaws 3 show right up on the screen, and as we've mentioned, I mean, this movie makes Jaws 2 look like Avatar as far as film quality goes.
My favorite credit, though, is I don't remember exactly what it is, but it's one of the most shameless. It's like suggested by the novel Jaws by Peter Benchley.
Yes. What the fuck does that even mean? I haven't seen that credit since. Before or since, I have never seen that credit. I don't know if Benchley was like, you know what, I don't want my name attached to this. Just say, you know, somehow, some way it's attached, suggested by. But I don't know. I haven't read that novel in a long time, Matt, but I'm pretty sure nowhere in that story is, you know, what would happen if a shark gets loose in a theme park?
Well, this is kind of Jurassic Park, Jurassic World.
I was going to say Jurassic World. Yeah, we just reviewed that a few weeks ago. And I remember even comparing this to Jurassic World when it initially came out, and I thought of that too. So we see Lea Thompson in her first big role, second time covering her this year, boys, and I'm debating on whether she was more hot in this or Howard the Duck. Adam, I guess you weren't expecting to see Lea Thompson here, right?
No idea that she was in this. Yeah. And my first thought is that, you know, poor Miss Thompson. I wonder which one. She had to enjoy the duck more than she had to put up with some of the shit on this. And I don't know. Maybe we should find a way to squeeze in the freaking Back to the Future anniversary and get her for a trifecta. But I had no clue this was her introduction. I'm going to say she has a presence immediately. And it's kind of clear that she would have a future in Hollywood. It's good to see her.
Yeah, but she, like a lot of these characters, is in and out of this thing. Like, when she leaves, she never comes back. Yeah. We see the skiers practicing as the shark is just kind of roaming around, and we have the Shelby Overman, this hunky dude, just distracting Kelly. So they all fall in, the shark is just about to get them, and wouldn't you know it, the boat starts right on time and they take off. So we have a little bit of a tease of the shark here.
I don't hate this. As somebody who grew up with a Marine World theme park up here in Northern California, seeing the ski show, seeing this type of water stuff was a big, big part that doesn't exist now, unfortunately, but I am immediately taken back to being a kid going to a water park or a water-themed park with my family. It wasn't SeaWorld. It was Marine World. Oh, at that point, it's Marine World Africa, USA. But it's amazing how much this puts me right in a time frame.
Same. Because I had those plush toys. You know, I had the killer whale plush toy and I had the dolphin plush toy. And I would have them fight pretending that the dolphin was a shark.
I'd rather watch that. In some ways, I think those plushes would move better than the actual shark you see.
We'll get there. And then we have the introduction of Lou Gossett Jr., fresh from his Oscar. Boys, I don't know if you've been paying attention to my social media. I actually watched An Officer and a Gentleman for the first time this week to kind of compare, like, was he really that good in An Officer and a Gentleman? Yes, he was. He was tremendous in that movie. But he joins the ranks of Halle Berry, Denzel after Glory and then taking dumb comedy called Heart Condition, Jamie Foxx in Stealth. These are just terrible nothing roles in huge projects that pay a lot of money, and that's what Gossett does here as entrepreneur Calvin Bouchard, and every time he's on screen, he is mugging, he is cackling, he's doing everything he can to say that, yes, friends, Roots and An Option of a Gentleman are flukes. He is insanely bad in this.
This is the level of grading that you got watching Richard Pryor in Superman 3, which also came out this year.
Mm-hmm.
His accent goes in and out if you watch the movie. I don't know what he's trying to do. In a lot of ways, he's kind of the stand-in for the mayor for the first two movies.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not. But I feel like they're taking it more from the movies than how he's portrayed in the book. But the movie also, at one point, was going to kill him off, but they changed that at the last minute because they liked watching him so much. And if you were going to do that intentionally, I thought they would have made him more of a scumbag. In a lot of ways, he's kind of like he's the mayor crossed with how Hammond is portrayed in the first Jurassic Park. Not necessarily the book inspirations. But yeah, I think he's abhorrently bad in this. Although nobody in this movie is particularly good.
I think he's one of the only few shining moments in this
movie. Oh my God. But then you say that ironically, right? You're not saying that just because... You're saying that ironically.
I have fun watching him. So I'm just grateful anytime that he shows up on screen, you know? Because it's Lou. And I can't believe you just saw Officer. There is so many great... Oh my God.
Yeah.
So many great performances in that movie. Jesus. Sorry. That blows me away. I got nowhere left to go.
Yeah. David Keith. I didn't realize he plays such a huge part of that.
Yeah. But I don't know. He's not hamming it up enough, but there's something every time that he's on screen. I'm glad when he shows back up to break up what is kind of some just pilot acting from everybody else that's on screen. It makes me laugh later in the movie where he is wearing the exact suit that Obama got crucified for in the mid-2010s. He's wearing the exact same tan suit. But the accent going in and out, him acting like he got rewritten lines, not only on the day, but from take to take. It's a bad performance, but it is one of the only ones worth watching throughout this film.
It is incredible that we get Oscar-winning actors like this 2 weeks in a row in this series. It blows my mind that the series was able to get the two actors that we get, this and the one we'll talk about next week.
Well, we also have to mention who's not here, because Roy Scheider made it his mission to make sure that he would have no way. So he did Blue Thunder.
Yep.
He only took that role, so there was no way they could ask him to do Jaws 3.
Yeah, he said Mephistopheles could not talk me into being in Jaws 3, is what he said at the time. God damn, as we've covered the last couple weeks, what a grumpy bastard that guy was.
Although I can't blame him.
No, I can't either.
By that point, you just become... You're already feeling like you're kind of typecast by doing the same character three times in lesser movies as they go on. That can ruin your career.
I mean, you could have really done something, though. You could have got Dreyfuss to be like a consultant or something for this theme park.
Well, Dreyfuss was tapped to be in Jaws 3 People Zero. He was actually attached to that project. So I don't know if he had some attachment to that. And after that was done, I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to come back. But there are ways you could have done this. And this is not one of them. All right. So we're seeing some host training. It's just like, their shorts are short enough. Shoni Chika will be back shoveling French fries. The line that always stuck with me.
That's how Leah Thompson got her start.
Yeah.
With a Burger King commercial or something.
Yeah. As well as Bouchard's spokesman telling reporters and us what the undersea kingdom is going to consist of. So we're getting a whole outline of this thing before we even go underneath. You know, he's talking about the cocktail bar that we're going to be seeing later on. He's talking about the huge undersea kingdom, the kid park and at one end of it. So all of this we're going to end up seeing. And then we see the shark just kind of slip through the gate. The skiers make their way in. Bouchard, he's introducing, oh boy, Adam, I know you watched Manimal. We got this Philip Fitzroy, who's going to be making his way into the park. I'm guessing they're playing off the Jacques Cousteau thing, but they're treating this guy like he's a complete celebrity.
Mm-hmm. Which then just gets inconsistent throughout the rest of it. It's a weird, it doesn't go as far as it needs to.
Well, he's basically Clint mixed with Crocodile Dundee. that's how this character is being portrayed. And I would appreciate this level of camp if the rest of the movie was in on the joke or was this heightened. But it's not. And because they try to contrast this with some like actual character development as best they can with the connection to the previous movies, it feels more out of place.
Mike Brody is looking at the gate that the shark snuck through. All right, Dennis Quaid. He was a friend of Gottlieb's because Gottlieb had done a movie with him called Caveman. Gottlieb had directed that. So it was a recommendation of Gottlieb that he's here. I don't have much of a problem with what he does with this. Problem is, I just don't believe this tenuous connection they're trying to make. Also, not since our Maximum Overdrive review have we had so much cocaine use to talk about. Because Quaid has been on record and said that he had such a coke problem around this time that there is not one frame of Jaws 3 where he is not high out of his mind. Boy, you can tell, too. In some scenes, you can really tell.
I was happy to see him show up before I realized that his eyes never stop bouncing around and he can't keep his eye line where it needs to be. It's amazing because I've heard that and I've read that. And I don't know who the hell he was that he would have such a, other than it just being Hollywood, he hadn't earned his freaking place in the coke pile yet. I mean, he had stood on to do good work. I can't say he's ever done great work, but he's also a presence that I don't know, credibility, maybe only because I've seen him since, but him being a part of the Brody family, him being Mike from what we got the last 2 weeks, I don't see it here. And it's a choice. He's Mike Brody in name only.
I hate the obligation to put the Brodies in this movie because if you remove that, there's no connection to the previous movies outside of a giant shark. And I don't like that. Yeah, a guy who survived not one, but two shark encounters. You know, his father will die of a heart attack, as we'll find out, because of a shark next week. Would get a job at SeaWorld. I don't care that he's an engineer. He's still working at SeaWorld.
And it's such a specialized field, too. He's welding underwater. That is something that you go to school for years to do. God, it is weird that he is working in water. They see that the gate is broken and insist that Shelby take a look at maybe fixing it that day. But Mike's just yelling out, no overtime! So, of course, he's going to go in later on that night.
Same thing Garrett yells to his staff before he goes home for the
Dude,
morning.
You are not fucking kidding. We cut to Mike heading to his girlfriend, Bess Armstrong. Later on, she'd be the mom in My So-Called Life. Here she is. She's training with Shamu. And by the way, this chick Liz, her assistant, not an actress. She ended up working for SeaWorld for years after this movie came out. Bess Armstrong seems to have put the work in for this movie. She's training Dolphin. She's riding Shamu. At least someone is trying here. I mean, this is something that you don't do easily. She had to train for a lot of weeks and months to do this, and I think she's doing pretty good.
I believe her in the role. I think she does a good enough job. I'm surprised that they actually name drop Shamu. I mean, that may be the biggest credit they could have put on screen if they had chose to. But to me, that also places this in San Diego SeaWorld, because that's where Shamu was, and boy, sharks travel, I guess. They hate the Brodies.
Oh, wait till next week. Matt.
Oh, boy.
You have no idea.
Yeah.
The only other thing I really remember, and she's in one of the best episodes of Tales from the Crypt.
Oh, that's right. She was. Yeah.
The one with her and Christopher Reeve.
Yeah.
And Meatloaf, ironically, which is funnier given the context of that episode. I think she's she's at least more endearing than any of the characters we saw in the last movie.
I love how she's saying that Cindy and Sandy, the dolphins, they're getting fat. So this is when Mike says that Sean is coming to town and they're going to go out to dinner when they pick him up. Mike mixes up mammals and fish, which, I mean, come on. You've been in water how long and you don't know a mammal from a fish? But here we are. We cut to Philip Fitzroyce, Manimal himself. He shows up, as does Sean, a guy I've seen in a few episodes of Family Ties, and that's about it. This guy is a TV actor. Here we have him in this big role as Sean, the boy from Jaws. They make fun of his cowboy boots, and he's going over his grades. All right, so we've already mentioned that where they have Mike is not really believable. I do believe Sean's thing, though, of saying, I'm going to go as far away from the water as possible. I'll just go to Colorado, which, by the way, if you want to go that far away, come to where I live. Come to Reno, Nevada. There's no ocean for fucking miles. So at least that's kind of believable.
Yes, although I get the sense these characters were rewritten because why the cowboy aesthetic?
Yeah, that's weird.
I'm glad that they don't punctuate that point, because I get, or at least I'm understanding, that's exactly why he's a cowboy, because that's as far away as you could be from some island boy that we got. So look, it could be a lot more ham-fisted, and I'll give it credit. It does not belabor the point.
I don't know. Louis Gossett Jr. has all the ham covered.
Yeah. he's got all of it covered himself. Meanwhile, we see Shelby Overman. He goes in the water to work on the gate. He's tightening a chain as a couple fish kind of startle him, but he's not doing this that much. As we see the shark show up and we see some bites in red as well as an arm floating in the water in fabulous 80s 3D.
And literal jaws that do not move.
Yeah.
I think it took too long. I think if you're going to have a 3D killing movie, we needed to do this beforehand. But this is so slow and just weirdly chopped, and it, oh man, all I can say is I hope it gets better. But this is, you want to impress me and get me engaged with your first kill, this is not the way to do it.
First of all, this movie keeps forgetting that there's a shark in it, which is weird for a movie called Jaws. And it's made worse by the fact that the shark effects have gotten... This movie's like the Superman franchise with Christopher Reeve, where the effects keep getting worse. Yeah. This movie does for sharks what those movies did for flying effects.
That's a nice comparison, actually. We then cut to a bar as Mike and Kay, they take Sean out for some drinks. We see the waitress Charlene. She's getting on Mike for Shelby being late as he's been messing around with some other broad behind her back. Speaking of backs, we're seeing a game of standoff, which I have no idea how to play. I don't think the people making this movie do either. I don't know, Adam. Both of us, we were kids when this movie was out. When I eventually got old enough to go to bars, I don't remember this game being played, but it looks like something they're trying to make something into, but it doesn't really do anything for me.
I've been to bars on the East Coast, the West Coast, and on military bases, and I have no idea what the hell is going on. This had to be a result of them having a fixed camera, and they couldn't find a way to have them shoot in pool, because what the hell is this? Right.
Ugh. Sean says that his fly is open, and Kelly is taken down, and the game actually seems like an excuse to me to flirt. Kelly comes to the table, and Kelly and Sean are just kind of looking into each other's eyes, and they're kind of falling in love right in front of us. Meanwhile, we cut to a set of robbers. Okay, so when I was a kid, this confused the fuck out of me. These guys are going in this water. They're here to steal some coral. For what? $200 a pop? You're going into a theme park in the middle of the night?
Oh, these coral bandits?
Yes.
And this doesn't come up. This is a one-time thing.
Yeah.
Either this was a holdover from a previous draft, or I don't know what it is, but wow, it's out of place.
Yeah, because they use Shelby Overman as the way of revealing that this isn't the shark that we captured. This is a much bigger shark. These two never come up again. We never talk about their bodies later on. Apparently they get eaten, but Adam, did this throw you off seeing these guys jump in this water and seeing all this freaking marine life come in front of you?
Completely blew me away. I would think that industrial espionage or, you know, something like that would be the way to go. I agree. This has got to be a complete just holdover. The thing, you could easily cut this out. It would not affect the movie. You would get a much better runtime. But I did not think that this would be the first time we ever see the wet bandits. You all, I'm proud of that.
Nicely done.
This just makes no sense. Now, coral is a thing that can be absolutely precious and all that, but they also would not use real life coral inside a marine park in this kind of environment. But yeah, it is completely strange that these folks do not matter. Not only by the end of this film, they don't matter after this scene.
No. And they do make a point. The guy who is pointing out the undersea kingdom earlier on, he does say that there's a part of the undersea kingdom where you are going amongst coral life. So it is a thing in this particular park, but yeah, you're right. After this, these guys are gone. They drop their raft before dragging it to the water as the bar table debates on who's going to be taking the tab. God, have I been here. A lot of alligator arms when you take people out to bars. Oh, I left my wallet in the car. We get a frog leaping at the camera. We then see the gang from the bar get out and head to the car and go for a walk. And this is the only time we hear the connection to the other films, as Mike tells Kay that he's thinking of going to Venezuela for a year and a half. Mike also talks about the shark attacks from when they were kids. So here's our connection, Adam.
Mm-hmm. And that's it. If you don't have this dropped, and you got this, you got the names. Other than that, nothing.
Yep. Meanwhile, Sean is getting dragged to the lagoon, which of course is where Mike was attacked by a shark in the first film, so we're getting a little bit of circulation there. Kelly undresses and goes out in the water as Sean worries about his boots getting wet. Kelly says that she can help him overcome his childhood fears as she runs out in the water, much like Chrissy did in the first film, by the way.
Gotta say, she's not wrong.
No. Me and you have been bitten by this bug many times, sir. Many times. Meanwhile, these fucking robbers are out in the middle of the water as one goes in and we get some shots of underwater life. We see Mike and Kay. They pull up and play a prank on Sean and Kelly, which results in a beachside Royal Rumble, Matt.
This makes me laugh, though. These two with the microphone and the light. Uh-huh. I got to say, joking on your brother, even just friends, like this is not near... I am not having a bad time as this is going on like I was last week. I'm kind of believing the world they set up. I don't think this movie ages as poorly as Jaws 2, so I'm enjoying who we get.
It's definitely not a slog I found a lot of Jaws 2 to be, but by the same token, for the first part of this movie, you forget that it's a Jaws movie, which I guess is a good thing, because you want stuff other than the shark, but also, from here on out, you forget that these two are actually the Brody kids.
We didn't see the other guy from the two robbers somehow get rocked into the water. I guess he gets pulled under and the boat pops. It's just bizarre. What, the shark was like, oh, I'm just going to go ahead, just pop this boat. Sean and Mike, they have a morning conversation over some product place breakfast as Mike gets called into work. We then get a dolphin show rehearsal as Philip takes some pictures and tries pimping on Kay. This was a weird conversation. She's just like, so why'd you ram that Japanese sailor? He's just like, because he got in my way, ruining my shot. Oh my God. So this is how you take out your competition, huh? You just ram their boat. We didn't see Mike. He shows up and he gets slammed in the back by Charlene, who's upset that Shelby did not come home. Mike says he figures Shelby was home and hungover. So I guess our next set of scenes involve them going and searching for him in the lagoon. All right, so the scene of the James Bond submarines. Here we go.
Oh, James Bond wouldn't be caught dead in something this tacky or this cheap. This makes 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea look like Avatar.
Our second Avatar reference. Yeah, these don't look good. I remember this was like my favorite scene as a kid. I love all this stuff, but man, you watch it. That left eye really sticks out because these scenes just do not look good.
Yep, you're going to be looking like Forrest Whitaker by the time this comes up.
Jesus. I do like that Mike can't tell the dolphins apart. He's like, is that Cindy or Sandy? And as Kay, once again, fat shames Cindy by saying, you can tell which one's which because Cindy is the fat one. They find a skeleton named Oscar out there just for 3D purposes as they pass by the control room. The skeleton's just waving at us. I remember that being a huge thing for me when I was a kid. I'm like, oh, he's waving.
I can't believe how bad this looks, though, either. Yeah. Oh, anytime they're trying to have that effect for the audience, it... Uh-huh. Jesus.
Well, it's also like this thing is supposed to be like an educational exhibit, but half of it's like a cheap haunted house.
Okay, so this submarine is so open and exposed, they have to put on scuba gear to get in a submarine that doesn't see... It's basically a fucking convertible, this thing that they're in to dive with. Makes no sense whatsoever.
They then park the sub as the dolphins start acting apeshit. Mike and Kay, they get out and look a little more before, my God, finally, a shark appears. Or I should say, a shark head model that's rammed into these fake rocks, because that's exactly what happens. But this startled me as a kid. You know, we even had like a surround system in my house at this age too, so this really got me. But you know the problem here, boys, and I don't want to be too mean because I have some friends who've interviewed Joe Alves, and for all intents and purposes, he seems like a hell of a nice guy. Still alive, still roaming around, but Matheson was right. This Joe Alves cannot direct. He can't set up suspense. His dialogue scenes are boring, poorly blocked. There is zero infrastructure to what he's putting on screen, and that's a problem.
Well, you can tell this is a first-time director.
I mean, it's... Yeah, he doesn't have control of what's going on. Universal's putting out a 3D movie because it's the gimmick and it's going to get some people in seats. Unless, hey, it did. Yep. Highest grossing 3D opening weekend until, I think, freaking Spy Kids or something. So it worked. But it's not Jaws, I'll tell you that. But hey, it's not Jaws 2 either.
Wow, so you're having a better time this week than last week.
Massively.
Wow, that's shocking.
I am not having as bad a time.
Okay, so, all right, that makes more sense.
Let's temper some expectations.
Okay, but this chase scene. So we see Kay, she's out in the middle of nowhere, underwater, right? She's holding out her hand, waiting for one of the dolphins to take her. But Alves uses a shot of the shark biting at something. So we think that Kay's hand or something is going to get bit. Nope, she just holds it out a few seconds longer until the dolphin finally takes it. There are just too many inept things happening in this film that really make you thump your head while watching it.
They get up to shore, but I can't remember, but they get up and I'm like, where'd she get bit? And I'm thinking she's literally missing a foot or a hand or something, and she's not. And I was really confused because I swore she got bit by that shark.
Well, this movie, even more so than Jaws 2, this one feels like it's rated G almost.
We have floating arms, and later on we get a corpse that fucking traumatized me as a kid, so I wouldn't go that far, but there are aspects of it.
Well, even that scene with the corpse, there's a lot of parts in this movie where the first part, I'm not crazy about it, but it does do its own thing. And then the third act, it just becomes a remake of Jaws.
So the shark hits, and it is now a race to the gate, and they're once again saved by the dolphins. They close the gate in time, and Mike, who has gone through two different sets of shark attacks, as detailed in our last two reviews, he just yells, "What the hell was that?" Twice! Jesus fucking Christ. Bruchard is upset that his dinner is being interrupted by a phone call, which says that Mike and Kay came in contact with a shark. So the next scene is of them looking at the gate as Phil starts asking for media coverage of them killing the shark on camera, and a debate on whether to keep it in captivity or kill it happens. Phil ends it by saying they die magnificently. And of course we have this thing that they're setting up, you know, all you need to do is pull the pin. Well, that's what we get later on. So we're setting that up at least.
I mean, you spell it out and exactly what's going to happen once again.
We then see a Hooper-type dart get loaded up right towards the camera. Again, this 3D effect of this guy putting this dart together and then it squirts right at the camera. And Danny details what this actually is. And then we see that Phil's going to be going down in a red suit for close-ups. And he says that Kay won't get bitten, just squeezed a bit. We then see Phil grab some grenades and another argument happens. And Calvin ends it by making one of my favorite lines of the whole film. No grenades. What the fuck? They head out into the water as the lights are turned on and they dance like King Richard getting ready to hit the Crusades. We go back underwater as the search is on for the shark and Liz reminds Mike that he only gets one shot. Phil has a camera as the shark attacks Kay. A struggle happens as the shark conveniently surfaces and Mike hits it right in the sled-pulled fin and Kay stabs it with her dart. See, they didn't need Hooper in the first one. They should have just had Kay here. She would have gotten the job done.
It's amazing that this is so similar to the syringes that we just discussed in freaking Jurassic World. Being able to capture something by just shooting it with a syringe.
Yep. Phil says that was a close one as Kay orders them to get the shark wrapped and in the tank. And then Calvin. See, this is... Matt, you're absolutely right. They don't know what to do with him because is he a villain or not? Here, this is like a complete asshole comment where he's just like, but is the film okay? Like, I don't care if anyone else is okay. Is the film all right? What the fuck? We see the shark getting lowered into the tank as Mike once again shows up and jumps into the water. And in this confusion of whether the shark is a fish or a mammal, it bites his hand and swims in the tank. We then cut to the water park as skiers are flying and dancers are tapping as the Undersea Kingdom opens up. And
it's a great beach season here on the 4th of July.
Why aren't any of these people killed? Aren't they getting eaten in this? Shamu jumps towards the camera as Mike again talks about how the Overman search is going, and Calvin says that if he turns up, fire him. Calvin is getting some updates as he gives orders to move the fish. So we cut to more water skiers as a pig dances. Yes, someone in a pig costume dances for the camera. As the ski team, the Silver Bullets, pull off the helicopters, which Philip is filming. Adam, you and I have seen many of these shows, haven't we?
We have. And I used to really like these shows.
Me too.
At the one here, it would always be, especially when they started working with DC, it literally would be like Batman and in his rogues gallery, freaking out on water skis. Oh, good times. A simpler time.
Matt, do you remember these water parks? Did you ever go to them as a kid?
No, because my family had money to go to Disney.
We see Sean pick up Kelly, who wants to ride the bumper boats. We see people enter the Undersea Kingdom, which turns into a weird haunted funhouse with tentacles that, again, linger in frame.
So I had never really, I knew that this existed, right? And I've seen the trailer for this and that. It is amazing. What is it? It's not Deep Blue Sea, but is it Megalodon? The Meg. This underwater kingdom has been, it seems like a fixture of every shark attack film that has come out since this movie. So if this thing seems to have any histrionics that have blasted beyond, this underwater kingdom seems to be a fixture fucking for everything nowadays.
Well, here's the weird thing. So this is taking place in Florida, right? Correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah.
Did they say it's Florida?
Yeah, because Mike's thinking of going to Venezuela, which is right around from Florida. There's no ocean connecting to SeaWorld, right? It's all encompassed in one little area. Am I wrong about that?
No, it's all enclosed.
It's all, that's SeaWorld what I thought.
SeaWorld in Florida does not connect to the ocean. Orlando is about 2 hours, hour and a half from the coast, and it's swampland. It does not connect to the ocean.
Yeah, it's all
it does not connect to any bodies of water.
Well, I'm not going to Jaws 3 for accuracy, for geographical accuracy.
No, I know that. I'm just, you know, that's what we do. We pick the nits, as they say. And I, after doing some research, I'm like, there's no way the ocean's connected. No, it's not.
But you also don't filter in ocean water, put it through a machine, and get fresh water out of it. That's not how that shit works either. Yes. You would kill every bit of marine life you have.
Exactly. We cut to Mike and Kay, who talk more about Venezuela and what's going on between them. Mike gets called away as Kay sees that the shark has been put on display. Oh, this scene. So Kay comes up and she sees that the shark is pretty much dying. So she jumps in, as does her assistant, and they're trying to save it. They're trying to move it around in the water as people are watching, and it dies, and we hear it cry as its attempt to rescue it fails. There are some fun decisions being made on the set. We hear a little baby crying to emphasize that the baby shark is dead.
Okay, so I don't know what happens, you know, in this movie. As they capture the shark, they have it here. I'm just like, man, they really fucking skimped out on the budget. This is a little ass shark for the fucking Great White. Like, I think this shark is going to escape and start killing somebody. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know that this ain't the shark's big mama. So I'm kind of grateful when baby shark dies, because at least we get a bigger shark.
So you had no idea that this was about a bigger mama shark?
No!
Wow.
I'm just thinking, how far have we fallen that we get this, what looks like a tiger shark that they're trying to claim is a great white?
That's funny. Oh, that's why I love doing these series. I remember asking my dad, do sharks cry after this? He even caught me as a kid. And Adam, you knew my dad. You can imagine how he answered that.
Yeah, they sure do. That's why the ocean's so salty.
Exactly. The Stroyce puts the blame on bad luck, as Kay says to go ahead and photograph it. This is also what's weird. Like, she's not even distraught about this. She tried saving it. It didn't work, but let's move on. Meanwhile, Sean doesn't want to go on the bumper boats. In open water, by the way. We see people through the undersea kingdom as the body of Shelby Overman finally turns up. This fucking traumatized me. And what's weird is we have this shot of this body just being raised up as they're walking through, right? And the shot of this girl against the window. Somebody is pushing her head against the window. I'm like, what the fuck?
Now that's a crowd in America.
Yeah. You're not kidding.
People at theme park can be assholes. Yeah. So there are parts of this that are shockingly more accurate than you would expect.
Good little jump scare.
You like that, huh?
Yeah.
All right, so this next scene made me question how the hell this movie got a PG rating, as we see slugs and maggots and everything else just leak from this body of Shelby Overman. As Kay looks and we see bones sticking through muscles. Jesus. I'm like, what the hell? How did this get a PG rating? But then again, it was PG or R at this point. There wasn't a PG-13.
I also do not understand the bot. I don't know. You see the face, and I can't believe, there's still sea creatures like crawling on the face. But when she pulls back the entire thing and you see the muscular, I have no idea how they think this is what a body looks like. It would have been out of Party City 1980, and those are what they're using for their effects.
Yeah, and throw some blood on it. All right, so Mike and Kay, they run to find Calvin as updates are going on about what's going on in the Undersea Kingdom. We see Calvin bragging about his shark screen, you know, his bubble screen. It's marine segregation, as he calls it. The control room gets a hold of Calvin, who is arguing to not shut down the pumps. And then we get images of the shark as Mike and Kay come in, and somehow they have deduced that this is not the one that they caught that has caused all this trouble. It is, as Calvin Bouchard calls it, the shark's mother, which is 35 feet in length, 10 feet bigger than the first one, and Calvin is starting to doubt this talk about some damn shark's mother. Oh my god, this fucking monologue that this chick gives. How she came to the conclusion that these two sharks are related, I don't know. How she came to the conclusion it's a female shark, I don't know, but my god, we're making some leaps here.
We are, but I don't think it's any more than we've gotten in the other stuff. You got the bite radius, you know it's a bigger shark, you know the other one could have not possibly done it. It's enough that I've seen in the last two movies that I'm like, yep, makes sense to me.
I don't like how now they're just replaying the greatest hits. This is the conversation with the mayor about closing the beaches with Hooper and the graffiti, yep. You know, the bite radius stuff. Now I feel like the movie is starting to go on autopilot to its detriment.
I will say she is Hooper in this, like just pretty much start to finish.
Meanwhile, the shark goes right through the bubble screen and makes itself known. Kay and Mike, they head out to the lagoon. Now here's the thing, this shark, huge in length, not one fucking death in this next set of minutes. All that happens is Kelly gets bit on the leg, which is a decent scene, but really, this is not scary at all. No deaths, it just makes this worse.
Well, this is also the world's slowest shark.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a shame because the shark itself looks pretty decent, though, poor thing, it's not as scarred up as the shark we got last week. Oh, fuck, that was stupid. But the shark looks good, but yeah, the way that it's moving doesn't make sense. When it decides that it fucking goes in reverse, sharks can't move that way. So I that stuff, it just from an intellectual standpoint, I can't believe I used that term for this movie, but that bugs me. But it's also like they got a slow and speed up frame, which always hurts, you know, the way that a movie looks. And this movie already looks as bad as it does because you keep getting these scenes and you can see that the massive matte lines as they're trying to make them pop out, you know, on screen. And ugh, man. It's just I'm laughing and I'm enjoying it in a cheese filled way, but I mean, this is processed cheese fud that goes on my nachos, and this is, oh boy.
By the way, I'm going to deduce that the main villain of this film is not Calvin Bouchard. It's this guy that bumps Sean and Kelly on the bumper boats. What an asshole this dude is.
What an Americana 1980s. Yeah. This dude is fat fuck.
Mike is looking like his dad from the last film as he's yelling for the skiers and everyone else to get out of the water.
I gotta say, this is how you have a shark chase a boat, though. I hated it last week on the water ski. I love it in this one.
Love. You're using the word love.
Dude, this, maybe it's because it's in, I mean, hey, you got an audience watching, but when the shark is chasing this group of water skiers, I love this.
It's right behind them, and they look back, and of course, it's moving slow enough, and they fall, and it just swims right by. You're loving this.
Yeah, I did think we were going to have it literally chomp off like 5 sets of legs, and I'm immediately disappointed that we got nothing by them falling in the water. I don't know how they all, that makes no sense at all.
By the way, also, put a pin in this for next week, but Matt, this shark snarls. It roars underwater.
Like a friggin' bull.
Yes. I use it as my blooper singer. We then get Kelly and Sean. They're knocked off the boat as a shark bites her leg. I do like when the shark takes her under. I think that's a pretty decently done shot. And when it bites her, this was the only part where I was like, oh shit, someone might die here. Of course, they don't do that. She gets, you know, she gets a pretty big bite mark. But Adams, should they have killed her?
They should kill somebody.
Yeah.
They should kill somebody we've seen or somebody that speaks, because we just don't get anything of that. I mean, imagine if you have an audience in the bleachers and you just started to see this lagoon go red. I mean, damn.
We get this skiff that separates into many pieces as Mike just barrels onto the beach. Kay says that Cindy and Sandy will need to take care of themselves as they close the gate. Meanwhile, Sean says that he's going to go with Kelly to the hospital. So this is the way we write Sean out of the rest of this film. Meanwhile, Calvin says that the Undersea Kingdom is closing, and they start walking as Calvin yells about not seeing shit down there. They need lights. This is how you follow up your Oscar-winning performance. I'm blown away by that. Meanwhile, as the tour is going on, I cannot wait to discuss this. A little girl says, Daddy, Daddy, look at the fish. And all of a sudden, we hear a guy just go, holy shit. That part has always stuck with me, and I can't help but smile each time I think about it.
Maybe laugh. What? About as accurate as you get.
Yeah, it is. You know, I'll say this. Of all the attempts at horror in this, I do like this shark attacking the Undersea Kingdom. Yeah, it doesn't look that good as it swims towards it, but when it smashes into the walls and water seeping in, this is the kind of dumb horror I expect out of these animals attack disaster movies, and I think this does it pretty well. Now, this goodwill goes away pretty quickly, but I at least enjoy this scene. Adam, as somebody who's watching this for the first time, how do you feel about this attack on the Undersea Kingdom?
Was waiting for it. I thought there was more of this. I thought more of the movie took place underwater in this Undersea Kingdom. So I'm finally getting it. It is the fear that I have when I go through these kind of things at theme parks and water parks. So it's effective on me. Does it look good? Hell no. It didn't look good in 1983. Sure doesn't look good in 2025. Damn it, timestamp. But it does what it needs to do. I mean, think about it, though. Tons of other movies are now doing this exact same scene, and at least this set this up. But I got to say, my hero of the movie is in this scene, and I got to find the shirt, because there is a guy, and this is the most random, but I paused it. I need a I let a gargoyle sit on my face t-shirt.
You were talking about someone else. Wow.
No, there is a guy who's got a t-shirt in a Jaws movie that says, I let a gargoyle sit on my face. And I need this shirt. I really do.
Nice catch. Matt, what'd you think about this animal attack scene?
I liked it better when I was playing the original Resident Evil. Because that's what I was thinking of when you go into the aqua ring. Uh-huh. And the sharks are literally attacking the window. You have to close the gauges. Mm-hmm. So the doors drop down. And those sharks in 1996 on a PS1 looked better than the shark in 1983.
We're even seeing Calvin just kind of look and think, oh shit, look what has happened to my part. Very John Hammond-like. I thought of John Hammond a lot when I was watching this.
Really did too.
I don't know, this movie doesn't require a lot of thinking.
Now, Adam, your hero is somebody wearing a Gargoyle Sat on My Face shirt, but my hero is this worker. Obviously, she paid attention in that class. She's making $3 an hour, but she's handling the situation of being in this water and being in this kingdom very well. This is my hero.
She is a professional. I'll give her that.
That's like Disney. They don't break. It's like South Park when they go to that mining village and they don't break character until the clock runs out.
Mike oversees some tunnel patches as he goes over the plan with Kay, who says that now she thinks she's going to go ahead and go with him to Venezuela. We cut to Leonard, the spokesman for Calvin Bouchard, who makes a statement about the pressure failing and what's going on in the undersea kingdom. Phil starts asking about the flush system and mentions disposing of the shark. And I love how he calls the shark him and Kay calls it she. So funny. Destroy says that he's going to lure the shark in using live bait and says that this film is going to be a means for retirement. In your case, sir.
I mean, it was for Joe Alves because he's never been in this.
Destroys and his partner, they jump in the water as Fred gives us commentary on what they're doing down there. And Calvin mentions that they're spreading some chum as they try calling the shark. And it eventually shows up when they pound this freaking camera. And again, what the hell are they doing down here? I can't really tell. They get the shark caged up, though, as Brody goes down to seal the tunnel. Meanwhile, Phil's rope breaks. He tries bashing the shark over the head with the camera. But again, I have to say, while sharks don't chew, I gotta say, I fucking love seeing Fitzroy's getting chewed up in this scene. All the bones crunching, leaking red, all this is pretty fun for me, even though this shark only has one set of fucking teeth. I have a lot of fun watching this, and I would just imagine myself watching it in 3D.
This woke me back up, because a lot of this that's starting to go on, this thing slows down to the pace of underwater aerobics, and just like, Jesus, criminy. And then this shit happens, and I'm like, oh my god, they did it. It makes no, they freaking did Jonah the Whale. Like, this is, oh my god, he swallows them all. Giggity. It's just, good job, Alves. But I mean, the rest of these effects, they're shit for even 1980s, but this moment, oh god, it makes this almost worthwhile to sit through.
My god, this thing is so, it's so fake looking that I think I'm watching a Roger Corman production with the shark. But I also, the shark expert doesn't know that you have to punch it in the eye to get out of its grip. He's got multiple shots to hit it there.
Adam, I always know something glorious is going to come when Matt starts off with, my god. We see that Kay is headed down there because, as she says, Mike needs eyes in the back of his head. She heads off into the open as Mike starts to seal job. Jack sees that Phil hasn't come back, and we get a Return of the Jedi Ewok-type set of scenes as he mourns the loss of his friend. I don't really understand what's going on here. I mean, we're going to talk about Rocky next year, where Stallone kind of gives a similar jumbled monologue, but I don't know. Adam, how are you feeling as this guy's just kind of yelling that Fitzroy isn't here?
There needs to be some ramifications for some of this stuff, and that's I'm sad we don't get it.
Calvin says that they'll suffocate the bitch by turning the pumps off. Every time I say a Calvin Bouchard line, I always laugh.
Meanwhile, all of his lines feel improvised, though.
They do.
Yeah, I think we know where the cocaine was coming from. Allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly. Well, Quaid has been pretty open about it.
Oh, no. Quaid's on record.
Yeah.
But
meanwhile, now we know why he took a movie called The Substance.
Meanwhile, the shark has had enough and burst through the gate. Again, we're seeing zero pressure being put on, only the shark staying in one position as the door pushes against the lock and eventually breaks. We're just seeing everybody in the control room going, Jesus, as the fucking gate just lifts. And we're hearing the shark theme again, but Mike's not done yet as we hear the shark growl and it appears. They swim away as the dolphins show up and the shark bites one of them.
These dolphins are the freaking raptors from Jurassic World.
Yeah,
bringing it right back to Jurassic World. Yeah, this was the saddest part for me as a kid, was hearing this dolphin screech, even though we never see the bite, only the jaws, they go up and then we hear it screech and I'm like, oh my god, this poor dolphin got bit.
Well, this is why Jaws versus Flipper could have been a thing.
Kay makes it in the door as the shark gets its tooth stuck. This was weird. They eventually seal it and make their way up.
Yeah, and it treats losing one tooth, and if you know sharks, they have like 200. It treats it like it got stabbed. It's like, oh, my weakness, one tooth.
Well, one of the things you learn in second grade, sharks have never-ending teeth. Yeah. They're like the breadsticks at Olive Garden.
What the comparison's being made here. But here's the thing, Matt. Sharks do have 200 teeth, but this shark only has like maybe 30. So this might be a big stab in this shark's heart.
Well, this thing's also, as we've seen, it's incapable of chewing.
Mike seems to have done it, though, as he orders the bulkheads open, and we see that the water is going down and people are safe. Yay! All right. We then get the shot of the movie, boys. This shot, in so many memes of this shark breaking the glass. Another thing, it terrified me as a kid. Now, as they're all yelling and this glass breaks. Again, it must have been cool in 3D, but you watch it now, it is so bad. My God, this is where Sharknado got all of it.
Mm-hmm. This is I've seen better animatronics on It's a Small World. Those at least move, have better range of mobility, and that ride's got better music, which is
break the glass. Yeah. I did not remember this until it happened. Wow. Wow.
Yeah, instead of break the glass, I'm thinking of Bela Lugosi yelling, pull the string! Because this is some Ed Wood shit.
We're seeing poor Fred, Calvin's nephew, who's been kicked down this entire movie by Bouchard, just get chewed up as Calvin somehow gets away. And as we mentioned, he was originally going to die here, but they decided to keep him for the sequel, right, guys?
Probably. And it makes, like, he should die. I mean, yeah. That's the logical thing.
Yep.
Just from that's screenwriting, not even one-on-one, that's screenwriting 0-0.
We also see that the shark is stuck, and that Phil's grenade is right on display as the shark roars. Guys, what the hell am I reading? And how obvious is it that this set of filmmakers just flat out ran out of ideas here? Are they trying to reenact the first film? I think that's what Matt said earlier, and I'm kind of getting that.
Well, it's the first two. It's the barrel, and it's the God's magic electrical wire.
You combined them into one? I mean, it's even yellow.
I'll take your word for it.
It is. So Kay and Mike, they notice the grenade, and we spend the next set of minutes seeing the shark being unthreatening because it's not swimming. It's just swirling its head around every once in a while.
It's like they're shooting it with a cattle prod to get it to move.
It's insane. And as Adam mentioned, sharks don't swim backwards. So we're seeing it like this view of it being stuck in this thing. By the way, it's the one that broke the glass. It's the one that got itself stuck. Kay and Mike, they're reaching in with a homemade hook to pull the pin, as they say. This is like a steel rod, and he just kind of takes it and bends it on his knee.
Yeah, apparently he's the bionic man.
This is insane.
Like, I know cocaine is a hell of a drug, but it doesn't give you superhuman strength. If it did, Joel Silver himself would have starred in Batman.
They finally do it, and as if we didn't get enough comedy, here are the Jaws, and apparently an E.T. doll that Joe Alves talked about in those interviews I listened to, flying past the camera in a huge explosion. As a kid, massive triumphant moment. As an adult, holy shit.
This explosion is the absolute best, though. This
you almost made me spit out my drink. You said absolute best?
for the explosion that made no sense in Jaws, to the electrocution and a shark catching on fire in Jaws 2, none of that made sense. I completely go with this giant red underwater poof. Like, this is the perfect encapsulation of this. Oh, shit. I love this explosion. I do.
I wish we had red and blue 3D glasses and I could watch it in the 3D. It's just,
I do too. Yeah. I do. There should be a way that they could, I mean, with minimal work, let James Cameron have fun with this. Just let him Piranha 3 double D it and just fix the 3D and put it out.
No. We don't need another Piranha 3 double D.
Exactly.
Which is basically this, because that takes place at a water park.
Yeah.
At least to get creative. I mean, it's how do we kill off the shark in every movie? 2 out of 3, we just blow it up.
Wag bada boom.
But the shark didn't finish for choice, which is why she ended up dying. I love these shots of him in this mouth, just holding the grenade out as they try reaching the pin. So we get a bit of a celebration as the dolphins show back up. By the way,
now it's the ending of Temple of Doom. the elephants.
Either way, as a kid, I had a friend who would tell me, look, you can see where the shark bit the dolphin. And I swear I looked for years. And when I got older, I was like, these filmmakers aren't even that smart. As smart as an 11-year-old kid to think of that sort of detail. But when we get this fake dolphin jumping up right in front of them as we freeze frame, oh boy.
It's another really bad effect. The color coding isn't right. The matte lines are bad. So watching it on a standard, I mean, an HD TV, watching the highest quality Netflix version of this, it shows just how bad it looks.
It's high def because you need to either be high or deaf to find this humorous.
And that's how we end, boys. Scale of 1 to 10. What do we give Jaws 3? I knew this would be a great review. Adam, as a first-time watcher, you go, sir.
I was so upset last week because Jaws is a masterpiece. Jaws 2, if you didn't listen and you're listening to this one, I don't know what happened. Go back. I was angered by it. This one, instead, it's not Jaws 3 People Zero, but it at least includes some of that cheesiness that I think you had to have. So the cheese is where I have fun. God, I wish there was some more kills. I wish it was a lot more bloody and could have played into that. In the meantime, Dennis Quaid, he's having a coked up ball. Lou Gossett Jr. is fucking, I don't know what he's doing, but at least he's somebody on screen that I enjoy. I'll say it. I actually enjoy seeing Lou Gossett Jr. here. I think the story, and I'm using that in quote, makes sense if this is the movie that you're going to make. So taking it to a theme park, taking it to the type of theme park that I'd gone to, seeing that shit. It's amazing that this is the one that I wish Jaws 2 would have been. Because give this that money, you could have done something different. At the end of the day, though, this movie looks horrible. Even when the scenes aren't in 3D, the grain is abysmal. The focus on the edges of the film stock is really, really bad. This movie, you got to see it and have fun with it, but it is, it's abysmal to look at. But at the same time, I have fun in every worst possible way. This is the MST3K of Jaws films, and I enjoy it for that. I'm giving this a 6 because I enjoyed myself way more than I had any possible reason to. So 6 on 10 for Jaws 3. And if you would have told me that fucking before I hit play, I would have told you to throw me in the shark tank.
Holy shit. Wow. 6 from a guy who somehow has been my best friend for over 30 years. Matt, what do you say, sir?
This is the textbook example of one of those viewings where alcohol should be a prerequisite, not something that you enjoy after the fact. Because having a beer and watching this, I do think is the perfect way to have the ideal viewing experience. Because if you're coming to this looking for something akin to the first Jaws or something that's an outright mockery, like let's say Gremlins 2, you're not going to get either of those experiences. In part because this film is so sloppily put together, it should have a janitorial staff working on it, not a second unit director. But unlike Jaws 2, I don't find this one a slog to get through for two reasons. One, it's not 2 hours long, which thank the heavens. And number two, you can have some fun with the inherent cheese. But by that logic, I also don't think it goes far enough in that department to just be an all-out, if not parody, then at the very least a send-up. And just, you know, something like, I'll use Lake Placid as an example. I think that tone you could have done to make this overall more enjoyable. But I'll say this, I had more fun with this than I did Jaws 2, much like Adam. So I'm going to give it a 5. Because I also don't think it's offensively bad outside of the filmmaking. You know, it's certainly a big step below, but it doesn't make me angry like I thought it would. Because once you get to a third movie and it's this much of a decline compared to the first one, it should be anger-inducing, but it's also pretty harmless by its own logic. So I'm going to land on a 5.
You guys are blowing my mind. In a couple weeks, we're going to be talking about a filmmaker by the name of John McTiernan, who, I want to detail, is so good at showing us geography, showing us where we are at all times. A big problem with this movie, to me, is its directing. I find the directing in this abysmal. I never know the geography of this theme park. I never know where they are at what particular time. And you top that off with some pretty outlandish performances. Now, as I mentioned, I have some nostalgia for this film. This was a movie I watched on constant repeat as a kid. I didn't want to watch the first movie. I wanted to watch this one. you know, and reenact it as it was going on with the shark and these dolphins. But as an adult, I watch this and I can't get past the ineptness going on. It has some terribly composited shots. It had some pretty bad advice as to how to do this 3D because the grain on this is abysmal. And unlike you guys, I found this movie to be a slog. Now, Joe Al's first cut of this was about 2 hours. The studio cut 25 minutes from it. So we almost had the Joe Al's cut, and I'm glad we didn't, because to me, this was kind of boring, and I watched this as an adult. I'm like, man, I don't know what I saw in this as a kid. It passes the time, but I still like last week's film more, so I want to go with a patented 4 on 10 with this. It was a great watch 30 years ago. It's not a fun watch now. So 4 out of 10 for Jaws 3 or Jaws 3D. Man, am I in suspense. After this week's review, I have no idea what to expect next week when we get to Jaws the Revenge. One person here has not seen the film. One person has only seen it once. This was another one I watched a lot when I was younger. I was anticipating the release of this when I was a kid. I'd watched Makings Of. I was excited for Jaws the Revenge, and it is notoriously one of the worst movies ever made. Adam, I'll go to you second. Matt, what are you expecting when we talk Jaws the Revenge next week?
I think instead of doing a formal review, we should let Adam just do a live commentary of his first time watch and just post that. Because, look, I mean, this is on the level of Batman and Robin or some of the other, like, notoriously bad movies where I'm wondering if I'm going to have anything insightful to say. And I'd rather just listen to someone who has never experienced Jaws the Revenge before. So that's my expectation. I have seen Jaws the Revenge, but it didn't buy me a house.
Adam, as I text you earlier this week, I cannot believe as a teenager I did not sit you down for all four of these films, but apparently you're going to be watching next week's film for the first time. Lay it on me, sir. What are you expecting when we talk Jaws Revenge next week?
I mean, look, you can't have a bad movie from the director of Pelham 1, 2, 3. This is, I gotta be, look, I've heard about this movie. I know its reputation. And all I know is that somehow sharks have vengeance somewhere within them. And that's all that I know. And I know that Michael Caine says he never has seen the movie that bought him a house. That is my knowledge of this. But I didn't have a lot of knowledge of Jaws 3. So I don't think it'll be good. And I don't think I'll have as much fun. But I have no clue what to expect. So I guess we'll find out. Come back next week. Same shark time, same shark channel. And we'll see how I feel about Jaws the Revenge. Oh, shit.
They pulled Lorraine Gary out of retirement to do next week's film.
I mean, I guess it says something that we haven't had a sequel in 38 years. So this is the one that killed the franchise.
Oh, we have, if you count Deep Blue Sea. Another one we might get to later on down the road. But that'll be next week. And also next week, we are going to announce our next retrospective, which if you listen to my rundown review, you can probably deduce what we're going to be doing towards the end of the year. And until next week, when we get to Jaws Revenge. All right. I'll have my podcast pod your podcast. Thank you, boys.
But I'm telling you, and I'm telling everybody at this table, that that's a shark. And I know what a shark looks like because I've seen one up close. And you better do something about this one because I don't intend to go through that hell again.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
He did it! He did it! You see it? He did it!
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
You know, you want to let that breathe for nothing.
And if you would be so kind, please take a moment and give us a positive review and rating on your podcast platform of choice.
I don't have to take this abuse much longer.
It truly helps others find and discover this podcast.
Slow ahead. I can go slow ahead. Come on down and chump some of this shit.
Check out the Percolated Media Archives, as we have tons of franchise reviews, including the Planet of the Apes franchise, Star Wars,
the ongoing Marvel series,
Pirates of the Caribbean, Indiana Jones,
the Exorcist films,
Avatar, Jurassic Park, and so many more.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
Stop playing with yourself, Hooper!
A 3 Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett and Matt.
Hey! Watch how you're cutting that thing, it's critical!
The 3 Men in a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
Excuse me, Chief.
That's great! That's just great! Now where the hell are we, huh?
Scheduling done by Matt.
They made me go with him.
The 3 Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
Daddy, Daddy, look at the fish!
Holy shit!
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network. And all opinions expressed on the 3 Men in a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
How the hell you do that, man?
It wasn't easy, believe me.
You better watch yourself with that fancy electrical equipment down there, buddy.
Such a live wire liable to make your hair stick up funny.
That's good, Michael.
The 3 Men in a Retrospective podcast is an independently produced podcast, and it's thanks to the support of listeners like you that help keep it that way. Please like and subscribe, as well as leave a review on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
A what?
Come and get me, you son of a bitch.
This podcast is a Percolated Media production. Copyright 2025, and any and all sound and audio clips are used for entertainment purposes only.
Now why don't you take a long, close look at this sign? Those proportions are correct.
Love to prove that, wouldn't you? Get your name into the National Geographic.
How they live and their general origins. So they like the educational aspect of this movie, but when I think of Jaws 3, I don't think of education.
Well, the lesson is how not to make a movie.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I rewatched Blackfish this week too. Holy shit. Oh my God. What a.
Never oof. Seen it.
Oh man, is that brutal. All right.
It's skewed, and that's why I can't do it.
Yeah, it is.
I can't do documentaries with an agenda like at the beginning and end of what they want to do.
Mm-hmm. We start off underwater. So they all fall in. The shark is just about to get them, and wouldn't you know it, the boat starts right on time, and they take off.
You're already feeling like you're kind of typecast by doing the same character 3 times in lesser movies as they go on. That can ruin your career.
I mean, you could have really done something, though, and you could have got... you could have got Dreyfuss to be like a consultant or something for this theme park.
So Mike Brady is looking at the gate that the shark snuck through. All right.
Brody. Sorry. Brady is a completely different. Oh, that's yeah. What we would have had in the original film.
Sorry. Mike Brody.
He hadn't earned his freaking place in the Coke pile yet. so it's strange. You know, this is pre-Starman. This is you know, so many other things that he, or sorry, wrong person. but I mean, he heads.
We then see Mikey shows up and gets slammed in the background by Charlene, who's upset. I'm sorry. We didn't see Mike.
It would have been out of Party City 1980, and those are what they're using for their effects.
Yeah, and throw some blood on it. Oh, guys, my boss is calling. Hold on a second.
Hi, Jen.
I just got sick of that.
I have no idea how they think this is what a body looks like. They just pulled some random shit out of Party it would have been out of Party City.
Destroy says that he's going to lure the shark in using live bait and says that this film is going to be a means for retirement. In your case, sir.
I mean, it was for Joe Alves because he'd never been after this.
I listened to a lot of interviews with Joe Alves this week to prepare for this, and he did go on to work with Carpenter on Escape from New York. He worked on that. He worked on Starman as well, and he worked with Steven Seagal, who he had no good things to say about. Interesting guy. There's a ton of interviews out there with him I would recommend checking out.
Does anybody have a nice thing to say about Steven Seagal? Like,
no. That's why I love listening to those stories. Because every time you hear his name come up, you know it's going to be negative.
Vladimir Putin, and that's it.
Yeah, right. Destroys and his...